Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
On Pilot TV this week, we are witnessing the birth of the Wild West with the latest Taylor Kitsch, Peter Berg collaboration, American Primeval, on Netflix. Heading out to Wales with Martin Clunes in Out There on ITV1, and getting our outies together with our innies in the long-awaited return of Severance on Apple TV+. Plus, what's more, if you watched Playing Nice on ITV last weekend, you'll be delighted to hear that both James Norton and Niamh Algar join us on the show this week to talk all about that. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. Now, look, as Larry David made abundantly clear, you absolutely cannot wish someone a happy new year after the 8th of January. Mm. So all I'm going to say is welcome to 2025, and thanks once again for inviting myself and my two co-pilots, Boyd Hilton, Keira Barrow, into your ears. And as a special bonus, you won't even get to hear my incredibly tedious story of how I nearly caused a massacre in the Swiss Alps over the Christmas holidays, because we covered that off on Pilot Plus. So that's done. We're finished. And so what we've done on our summer holidays is complete. You don't need to sit through that. But while we're on the subject of Pilot Plus, I mentioned this last year, Pilot Plus is going up from $2.99 a month to, hang on, let me do some maths, $3.49 a month. That's it, isn't it? That's 50p, isn't it? Yes, absolutely that. And it goes up on the 1st of February. But if you sign up for a year now, you can still do so at the lower price. So you should absolutely do that. And why wouldn't you? Really, because not only will you get to hear about our holidays, including Boyd's hotel anecdotes as and when they come up. Absolutely worth it. Please form an orderly queue. But you also get a second show every week, including an extra review, spoiler discussion, Kay's post bag, obviously a highlight of Pilot Plus, not a euphemism, plus dedicated spoiler episodes, the podcast 12 hours early and completely ad-free. You'll also get to hear last week's episode, lovingly dubbed the Merineum Plug, in which we covered off all of the shows that we missed over Christmas and the New Year. So that's an unmissable one. You're going to want to listen to that one. But more importantly, though, you essentially keep our corporate masters at Lumen happy and make it far less likely they're going to stop us from doing this podcast. So really, we need your cash. Right, enough begging. Let's get started, shall we? Kay and Boyd, how are you both? Are you excited? Are you champing at the bit? Are you raring to go?
That was a very elaborate and lengthy introduction.
Thank you.
Well done. But I assumed you were going to start with an apology.
An apology?
Ooh.
To us, to the listeners, to the world at large, because there's a reason why, listeners, if you're all wondering why there was no episode of Pilot TV this Monday, which was what, the 6th of June? 6th of January. The 6th of June.
How much of this year have we missed?
The 6th of January, well into the new year. And as you say, not really, too late even to stop wishing people Happy New Year. Your Christmas tree should have gone by now, you know, all of that. And yet, where was the new episode of Pilot? No, even noticed, because you selfishly were in Switzerland or something.
I was.
Nearly killing yourself.
Yes.
And we didn't have an episode. And people were clamoring.
FYI, I was dealing with the correspondence of people going, where's the episode?
I had people coming up to me in the office saying, why isn't there? Where's the episode? I was like, what can I do, James?
To which point, I would refer them to the previous episode of the podcast where we were very clear that we weren't coming back until the 13th.
I referred them to James. I said, it's all his fault.
Hey, if people subscribe to Pilot Plus, they'd have got an episode last week. What am I going to do?
Go to Switzerland?
Not go to Switzerland.
As we know that, well, anyone on Plus, and I know that you're using that as an incentive.
Yes.
If you buy Pilot Plus, you'll be able to hear how
my tedious holiday
James
story.
James nearly killed himself. Yeah.
Next year, Chris Hewitt did with Empire is he had the podcast. In fact, it went out earlier than our what should have been the day when that Pilot went out on Monday. It went out late last week, in the middle
on its normal day on Friday.
On its normal day on Friday, and he managed to get everyone involved. But of course, James wasn't on that episode because he was farting around in Switzerland, nearly killing himself.
I wasn't on that either. Yeah.
So that next year, maybe you just have to us do it, and we
just do it without me.
Ditch James. James will be off.
To be fair, let's be fair James to James. Be, James after James his will be escapades in Switzerland, he's never going skiing again.
No, I think it's never happening. I think he's going to step it up. I think he's going to be in like you know, Vancouver or whatever it's called, you know, some even more elaborate snow skiing place.
I'll go full Val d'Azur.
Yeah, Val d'Azur, yeah, full on luxury. But wherever he is, yeah, he'll be away somewhere.
I have to say, it was actually quite, this is not a defense of Jane, but it was quite nice having a little break.
From me, is what she's saying.
Yes. It's quite nice to have him up the mountain.
Well, we only missed 1 week. We missed 1 week.
Yeah, but, you know, does Joe Thingy miss a week? Does Joe Rogan miss a week? You know,
I suppose taking Christmas off is woke, so probably not.
Exactly. It's too woke. Does Donald Trump take a week off?
God, we wish.
Sorry.
I don't feel like we could have recorded any more episodes before Christmas. We recorded about 30 in the last week, and I think one more would have pushed us over the edge.
No, we'd do it in the new year, yeah.
While you are dragging me for missing a week, I was particularly interested by the fact that people were asking Kay what time the episode was dropping, at which point Kay then asked me what time the episode was dropping, and I said to Kay, if an episode were dropping, do you not think you'd have recorded one?
Yeah. Listen, right? What happened was, he came off the mountain particularly sassy, and, and texted me that, and I said, James, we recorded so many bloody episodes before Christmas. I lost track.
Yeah,
I lost track whether I should be Christmassy, whether I should have a New Year vibe. It was very confusing.
What people obviously don't realise that happens, because obviously we're on YouTube, people watching maybe now as we do it. The camera edit of the podcast for the Christmas episode, the last one we did, not the review of the year, the last one we did, for some reason the cameras were on, it didn't work. But I was like, well, we wore Christmas jumpers specially for that episode.
It didn't record.
What? No, it recorded, but it didn't. So what it does is, as I'm talking, it flips to me. Like, it does a kind of a rough edit based on who's talking. But it didn't do that. So it was broken. And so normally I'd say, I can't put it up. But I was like, no, fuck me. I wore a Christmas jumper. So I spent an entire day manually cutting together the YouTube video just so people could see our Christmas jumpers.
Okay,
maybe I might forgive
him. Get off his back, Boyd.
Okay. Yeah.
forgive and never forget.
Do you know what? The reminder that you're recording for YouTube is an explanation of why James is suddenly just gazing forward.
I'm looking at the camera.
Gazing at
looking right down the barrel.
That's
how you do it. Right, okay, fine. So we should segue into the traditional section of what we've been watching. Now, during the Merineum plug, we covered off all of the stuff that we missed over Christmas and New Year. So we probably don't want to rehash all of that stuff that we reviewed. So that big chunk of stuff. So have you watched anything that wasn't, you know, like on over Christmas and New Year? Have you watched anything else? Have you caught up on anything?
Well, yes. I am just going to repeat one thing I said on Pilot Plus, which is that I watched the final episodes of Bad Sisters and Shrinking, both of which I enjoyed. We're going to talk about Bad Sisters.
Yeah, we're going to do a spoiler chat. Yeah.
And
at some point in the distant future.
Well, when you finish watching it.
When Boyd's pulled his finger out. Mm. And what I will say is the Shrinking finale particularly was brilliant. I know there's a lot of listeners who do watch Shrinking, unlike James, who's refusing to. He's dragging his heels. But it was exceptional. So, yeah, I was happy about that. And the other thing I caught up with is Spent. So that's the Michelle De Swart comedy. Do you remember that? About the model who came back from America.
Yes, I do remember that one. Because she's a former model herself, yes.
Yes, and she came back and it was about her hiding her poverty. She was broke and stuff like that. And I watched it all and I thought it was really, really good. I thought it was gritty and real and funny. And yeah, I enjoyed it. That's what I've been watching.
I will say, because we reviewed, among other things, Harlan Coben's Missing You. We did that, which you guys liked a lot.
Yes.
I will say the Empire review of that was less glowing. we put that up yesterday.
How many stars? Yeah.
I believe two were thrown its way.
I think that's fair.
I don't think, no.
Two or three. I think three. Three was good, I think.
Well, it depends what what gauge you're using for entertainment value and addictive viewing. These Harlan Coben shows are, that's what the whole thing's all about. It's incredibly addictive storytelling and kind of a fun, super fun time. That's why we get to see them over Christmas, because that's when people, you know, want that kind of stuff. So they don't take themselves too seriously. So I think it's a, you know, 4-star piece of huge entertainment. In fact, someone was talking to me about that today in the office, how much fun they had watching it. It is super duper fun.
So super duper fun.
I do acknowledge is for Empire's high end kind of tastes,
elitist twattery.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Okay,
like one of the upper floors of Lumen.
Yes, the board did not appreciate it.
No, the board did definitely not appreciate it. But I did. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, and they're just so, as I say, they're so fun. Those stories.
Are they super duper fun?
Super duper fun. I'll use that phrase again, Kay.
I love that.
I love the fact you're amused by that phrase.
Very good.
Yeah. All the other things. What we talked about? Oh, we talked about so many things on Plus, didn't we? Squid Game.
Our festive
Gavin
viewing.
And Stacey.
Squid Game, which is the only show I watched really over Christmas.
Can I say I like the person on Twitter? Was it Twitter or was it Blue Sky? I can't remember.
It was one of them. I think it was Blue Sky.
Who basically picked up on the fact that James like was hosting a show, like a TV podcast, and hadn't watched the. From Will's, Will says hosting a Christmas and New Year special of a TV podcast and refusing to watch the two biggest shows of the season and probably rest of the year is peak James Dyer.
What were the two? Wait a minute, one's Gavin and Stacey.
I couldn't work out. I had thought about this long and hard. The Traitors, maybe.
Oh yes, yeah.
But I couldn't.
Traitors,
I couldn't think what.
No, it will be.
But also,
Traitors, yeah.
Gavin and Stacey, biggest show this year. Get out! What are you talking about?
What,
this is the year where The Last of Us Series 2 comes out. Come on!
No, but Gavin Stacey was last year. Is literally, officially the biggest show, not only of last year, but of the decade. In fact, of the couple of decades.
I suppose if you're going to use numbers and
if
maths,
you're going to use facts.
You know, facts. I'm a vibes man, Boyd. I work on vibes.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Well,
you certainly got a vibe.
That's one explanation for it. But I did find a show that I forgot to mention, funnily enough, in our epic Plus special where
the Mirrenian plug.
The Mirrenian plug.
Stop calling it that. Crimbo limbo.
You really hate that word. Why is it so offensive to you?
Mirrenium.
I know what the origin is, but just get used to it. You're adding your whole own.
Well, he keeps on going Mirrenian plug, and he's saying with a glint in his eye.
Because it is the podcast that plugs the gap in the Mirrenium where we weren't doing podcasts.
Exactly.
That's all it means.
Yeah. Now, Boyd, can you understand what I'm taking? Offense to it.
There's a show, Patience, started on Channel 4, which we didn't, which again, if we'd have had an episode out on. They could have reviewed it.
He's never happy.
This is the drama series about a young autistic woman who is an archivist at the local police department. So she basically helps to collate evidence that the police use in cases. And it's a procedural, and Ella Maisie Purvis plays her, and she herself is autistic, neurodiverse, etc. And it's a real attempt by Channel 4, the production company, etc., to kind of explore neurodiversity, because there's another character who she starts working with, this young woman starts working with an actual detective, and they start solving crimes, which is, you know, is a formulaic idea. In fact, there's a show coming up, an American show coming up, that has a very similar idea. But nevertheless, it's very well done, and she is sensationally good, Ella Maisie Purvis. She's a proper star. And I thought it was really interesting the way it kind of looked into some of it was a bit kind of clunky, to be fair. By the way, you know, we talked about the Guardian review of
Playing Nice,
which is like one star scale. There's a pretty scathing review of this show as well, and they're really taking things to task. But I found it very
super duper good.
Super duper good. That could be the new.
That's a new phenomenon.
Oh, it is super duper good. She's particularly super duper good, this actress. And I thought it was interesting, kind of enlightening, but most importantly, gripping. And the first case in the first episode is a really interesting one. So yes, I would recommend Patience. It's on right now on Channel 4, Wednesdays and Thursdays, 9 p.m.
Chanel number 4.
Chanel.co.uk, wherever their streaming services.
All 4.
Not all 4. Not more 4. Not plus 4. Not 4OD. It's just Channel 4.
Just 4.
Yeah, so Patience. Go for it, everyone. How about you, James? What have you been watching?
Well, as you know, the only thing I watched over Christmas was Squid Game, so there's not a lot there. Although I will say, before I finished for Christmas, I did mainline and finish season 2 of From. Mm. So I am now completely up to date with From, which is appropriate, given that season 3 starts this week here in the UK, obviously aired in the US already. Really loving From. So season two was good, but it does this thing where it introduces a whole new element which takes up the whole of that series, and then they resolve that new element. So you're not entirely sure that you made much headway during season two, but it was very entertaining and had a big twist at the end. Now, season 3 is one that we would review this week, but neither of you watched the show, so there's almost no point. So I'm going to do like an almost mini capsule review from season 3
now.
So, yes.
Okay, zoning out.
So, right, case checked out.
Zone out, get ready. Yeah.
So I've only watched the first episode of From season 3, and it ends with a scene that is quite full on, quite shocking. Obviously, not going to spoil it. I'm going to say what it is, but it's pretty intense, and that it really kind of, as a kind of mission statement, it reminded me a little bit of Sons of Anarchy, because I don't know if you remember Sons of Anarchy, when it started a new season, it would almost always start with an episode that had something horrible in it, like something shocking, something really arresting that would traumatize you, like someone's relatives being set on fire or a major character getting killed. Like, they were a lot. And this had that vibe to me, like it had a real kind of like mission statement feel to it. So it's definitely sucked me in for season three of From. And I think From is a great show. It feels like it's much more horror oriented than Lost, but it has some of that same vibe to it.
What is the premise of it again? Because I remember the first episode.
Yeah, I suppose I should mention this for anyone who doesn't know what From is about.
For me, as much as anyone.
Right,
I remember about it, to be honest, is the main character's called Boyd.
Really, that's all you need to know. It's Boyd the show. So that's Harold Perrineau Jr. He plays Boyd. He's the sheriff of this small town. Now, what's interesting about this town is no one can leave.
Oh, yeah.
They can't, like, if they try to leave, they just end up back at the town.
So
they're
like
trapped
in
this town.
So there's a new family that arrived, wasn't
Yes.
there?
Yeah, so all of the people who are in this town have become trapped there. And what will happen is they'll be driving along a road somewhere in America. And it doesn't matter where in America, they can be in different states, and they'll see a tree that's fallen across the road. And once they've seen the tree, that's it, they're stuck.
Oh my
they
God,
turn around, they go back.
Can you imagine if that happened, but with this studio?
Yeah, well, you're stuck in the studio.
Yeah,
you can. I mean,
forever.
It sometimes feels like that, doesn't it? To be
For
honest.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so they're stuck in the town, so they can never leave the town. But then what's also bad about the town is when night falls, when it's dark, these people come out of the woods, and they're all dressed like kind of like 1950s or 30s, sort of like there's a milkman, there's like a teacher, they're all dressed, there's a farmer, they all come out, and like someone's wearing a suit and tie, there's an old lady, and they're monsters, and they will kill you and tear you to pieces, and they're nasty things. So no one can go out at night, no one can leave the town.
So it's like Lost meets like zombies.
Yeah, it is a bit like that, like Lost meets Pitch Black meets, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Here's a question for you. I've seen it. It's From in capitals, isn't it? All capitals. Is that
From.
The official? Is it officially has to be all
From.
In capitals?
Yeah, you have to shout it.
Like
Mindhunter.
Mindhunter,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah, and seven.
That's how you got to say it.
Yeah,
exactly that.
From. Okay. I'm tempted to go back because I did really, I remember really enjoying and being fascinated by the first few episodes. Mm. Yeah, so I should go back.
I was mainlining episodes while wrapping Christmas presents.
Huh.
So, yeah, I got through quite a lot of that. But I'm enjoying it a lot. So I want to see where season three goes. So I will, I'm putting them on notice,
Yeah.
I need some headway to be made with season three. I think that's going to have to happen because of what happened to one particular character at the end of season two. So it was a big twist. So because of that, I feel like we're going to have to make some progress. Mm. But things like, let's just say things are becoming trickier for them. Things are changing. Things are becoming more difficult for them in the town. As if, not being able to leave and monsters weren't enough.
Yeah, yeah. How much more do you want?
Exactly.
Jesus Christ.
But yeah, from season three. So from season three, which you will be able to see on Czech's calendar. It airs on Sky Max on the 14th, Tuesday the 14th.
From
Tuesday the 14th. Right, shall we have a listener question, Kay?
Yes, let's. Okay, so...
that's the sound of a woman who forgot to do the key segment of the...
No, I didn't, but thanks for saying it's a key segment.
Yeah.
Okay, so this message comes from Marcus, who says, why do some TV shows have so many producers, executive producers, co-producers and co-executive producers? What is the difference and what do they all do? Over to you, Boyd and James.
Oh, that is a good question.
I mean, the simple answer is that it varies massively.
Yeah, you can't answer that question.
Yeah, but what, do you know, I'm semi-obsessed with exec producer credits particularly. And I like to ask interviewees when I'm interviewing some department who has got an exec producer credit what it means.
What does it mean for you in particular?
And it's always interesting.
I always want to ask that, but I think is it going to be insulting that
I should know? Absolutely not. No, I think they're fine with it. Most of the time they say, well, I do have a creative role. And they emphasize the fact that sometimes it starts from casting, through to, if they're a big star, if you're Jodie Foster, for example, and you're in the next reboot of True Detective, I'm pretty sure she became, a key creative figure in the development of that show once she's cast, because she's so powerful, important, and respected. And so I think that, she would have been you know, she would have been involved, put it that way, in creative decision-making. But it is a bit vague. But it can be a, it can, as it is in film, it can literally be, we want to get the star and we'll give them exact producer credit just to get, just
and,
to make.
But it's not always, sometimes in film it means more. Yeah, but I feel like in, I feel, my vibes tell me that in film, it's more likely to be a kind of an honorific than it isn't here. Yeah.
But you also get, as that correspondent, what was that correspondent's name?
Marcus
mentions it. Well, you also get, sometimes you get loads of producers, you get series producer, you get producer, you get executive producer. So it is a, it is like the producer, if a show has one producer, and again, even producers, I ask, what actually do they do is an interesting question, but they can't, it's kind of up to them to get everything together and, you know, make sure that all the budgets work for the scenes that they're going to have to create and that everyone's on board and that, you know what you're doing day to day. That, you know, that's kind of what the producer does in TV, I think, more than in film. Sometimes often it's like they're more or less making sure that there's the money's there.
Yeah, and to, hiring to crew. Like, I feel like in film, like the producer is in charge of the logistical aspects of getting the film made, whereas the director is the kind of creative lead.
Right.
Whereas on TV, the executive producer is often the showrunner. Is the storyteller, is the creative
lead. Oh, then the showrunner, right? Because again, often executive producer these days is actually a euphemism for showrunner.
Mm.
And, you know, when you see the credit executive producer and writer or something, you think, oh, well, actually, they're probably just a showrunner, but no one's ever credited a showrunner. Showrunners famously...
And not all shows have showrunners.
Yeah, famous, particularly in this country, yeah. But in America, where pretty much every scripted show does have a showrunner, often they're never credited as a showrunner because you just have to work out who they are.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
I've just made a decision, guys. I'm going to be exec producer of the podcast now. And my role will include just doing exactly what I do now, no additional tasks, but I just think it sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay. EPK.
Yeah.
If you want a vanity, executive producer credit as they're known, then fine. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
You can be EP and you can be best boyed.
BB.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. A couple of messages I also wanted to mention about our top 25 lists.
Right.
So one came from Sophie Petzl, who said, your top 25 list is mental.
Thank you, Sophie.
With a crying emoji. And then Andy said...
Did she elaborate?
No.
No, that's it. That's all we're
getting. That's why I loved it.
Yeah.
And then Andy said, love the 2024 roundup. The bloopers just sounded like the normal show, though.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's fair.
On that note, I want to say...
Ah, yes.
You know where I'm going. Basically, I mean, you should have seen the chat, the WhatsApp chat group after the bloopers went out, because I didn't pre-listen to it.
No, none of us heard the blooper reel before it went out.
The difference is, the audio was sent to James.
Yeah, I just forgot to listen to it.
And he chose not to listen. Yeah. And I didn't, I should have checked. Anyway, I just want to apologise to everyone, because it basically was 10 minutes of me just swearing a lot.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And saying things that I'm not going
to
repeat now.
I haven't listened to it either, by the way.
Yeah, and so I just want to say, going forward, I'm going to try and swear less. But I also want to give context that basically all that swearing happened. I definitely need to give context for this, because James and Boyd in it call me a racist. Or say I've said racist things. And the reason is because I say...
Because you're racist?
No. Nope. It's the truth of it is that I have difficulty saying any name. Like, I mess up. I was going to swear then. I mess up all names. And when I get a name wrong, I then start swearing because I'm so frustrated with myself. Then what happens is we stop so I can redo it. But we have a little bit of banter in between. Then I swear at them more because I'm frustrated and they're winding me up. And so you didn't hear any of the mispronunciations. All you would have heard is them accusing me of being racist and also me just swearing a lot. So, yeah.
I mean, we have in the past genuinely lost like a whole 10 minutes to like some Welsh name that you just have been utterly
but every name, but English names, every name. I just, and now I've become so jittery about any name that like the most basic names I'm getting wrong. So like, yeah, anyway. But also I kind of think 10 minutes over what, how many episodes do we record a year?
Too many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And recording with you guys, I think 10 minutes swearing isn't that much, but
okay.
I'm going to endeavour to swear less.
But this is the thing. So Kay's New Year's resolution apparently is to swear less.
Yes.
And it is
in Boydian, life or just on the podcast?
Yeah, good question.
I'm swearing less in the car because I used to...
Specifically in the car?
Yeah, it's really funny because my friend pointed out that when I drive... I'm going to swear now, right? But in the car, I often use dickhead willy-nilly.
Dickhead willy nilly. That's yeah. the phrase you use.
Is that someone? Of your, is that your nickname for one of your passengers, or is that?
Yeah, I like about it. It's a nice pet name.
Anyone. Yeah. It could be about a fellow driver, a pedestrian. Anyone. Mm. It's just kind of casual term, and it's not always with venom. But my friend pointed it out, and then so in the new year, I've also tried to stop doing that as much. Yeah.
There was some pushback from the listenership when you said this, that you were going to try and swear less, that they did not want you to swear less. They wanted you to swear more, I think.
I know. It's either that or I have to be more careful of, I'm going to have a serious word with Darren.
I think they want authenticity. So it's like, if you're going to swear, if you feel like swearing in the middle of a sentence, then you can't censor yourself. That's what...
I know, but I get a bit lazy and I just, you know, I use it all the time. So okay. I'm just going to cut down. All right, how about this? I'll cut down.
No, just forget it. Fucking forget it.
Man. I'm going to keep... we should have bingo sheets. Like, we keep a tally of every time Kate swears. Yeah. And it'd be like, this is a four fucks, one shit podcast. And we can just, you know, we do it like that. And I'll put like a little, like a disclaimer on each podcast.
And when she lets loose with the C word.
Then we win money.
You guys don't swear that much, do you? Or is it that Darren
just... Have you met me?
Yeah. I swear quite a lot.
So is it just that I heard it in isolation? I suppose
It's basically, it was mainly you swearing on the blooper reel because they were all taken off your racist outbursts. So.
They're not racist. I just cocks up messages.
You did what?
Names. I just
you did cocks. Cocks up. I mean, there we go. This is like gold already for the blooper reel. The blooper reel 2020.
I can't wait till the end of this year. It's going to be amazing. Yeah.
Wow. God, I'm so tense. Okay. Carry on.
Cocks up, dickhead willy nilly. It's going to be brilliant. Okay.
Super duper.
Did
good.
We have a question? I can't remember.
Yes, we
have answered it. Producers. Exec producer, remember? Oh, my God.
That was the question.
Remember, it's my inaugural episode of being the exec producer of this podcast.
I see.
Being the fucking executive producer.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, brilliant, fine. Mm. That was our listener question, apparently. So now we move on to this week's guest. And this week's guest, I should say, popped up in ITV1 on the 5th of January, I want to say.
Yeah, good memory.
In Playing Nice, as a couple who discover, to their horror, that their baby was swapped at birth, which is bad enough, but obviously worse when the actual birth parents turn out to be complete sociopaths. Now, speaking of complete sociopaths, we sent Kay to talk to James Norton and Niamh Algar. And this is what happened.
James, Niamh, welcome to Pilot TV Pod.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
James, I wondered if you could, for listeners, just sum up what Playing Nice is all about.
Yes, I can. So Playing Nice is about two couples who find out that their three-year-old sons were accidentally swapped at birth. And that's the kind of initial hook at the very beginning of the story. And the show is really about how these four people navigate a very treacherous, traumatic situation. And it takes us through lots of knotty, thrillery twists and turns.
Absolutely. One of the things that I love about this show in particular is that instantly it makes you think, what would I do and how would I feel in that situation? And I think even if you're not a parent, right, because you could be the child in question, when you read the scripts and where did you sit with that? Like, what were your thoughts, both of you?
God, I don't know. I feel like I probably wouldn't react the same way as Maddie did. Like, it's just like a sheer shock. And the idea that trying to get out of this state of shock quick enough to be able to try and keep up with the trials and tribulations that Miles and Lucy kind of throw at them is a lot. And you know, it's such a terrifying thought that, you know, to the idea that you could be losing a son but gaining one at the same time.
I think you'd be quite Maddie-esque.
Yeah, you'd be very Pete.
Would I though?
I think you would be Pete.
I would hope that I'd be a little bit more confrontation, a little bit less avoidant. The really interesting thing which has been kind of really fascinating for me to explore with Pete is this kind of question over, you know, he's a good guy and he sees the best in the people and the situation. He's an optimist. And he's also a modern man in that kind of progressive sense. He steps back from his career in order to let Maddie have her career. So in many ways, he's always on the kind of right side of the argument. He's a good guy. And actually what happens over the course of the story is that he realizes, along with the audience, that to be giving space to your partner isn't always right. You can't just be passive. You have to sometimes be active and step up and make decisions and be confrontational, because to play nice in this world doesn't always work. And so what was really interesting for me is playing someone who was quite close to me and thinking, would I be more confrontational as James? I hope I would. I think I would be a little less avoidant than Pete. But
you definitely try to like make friends with everyone.
I do like to be fair.
Well, just hang out. Let's go to Norfolk. Come on.
I do love to be loved, which is disgusting.
Can't be alone.
Niamh, let's talk about Maddie, because she has already endured a lot, but yet when this situation arises with Miles, as we said, Pete's a little passive to begin with. I mean, you're kind of shaking your fist, wanting him maybe to be a bit more confrontational, but Maddie, like, when Miles plays dirty, she will not be cowed, which I think is fantastic. How did you feel when you were playing that? Like, you kind of said that you'd probably have maybe a similar reaction.
Yeah, well, the sparring match between Miles and Maddie it was really fun to play, because you're playing opposite James McArdle, and he plays it so brilliantly. And there was a scene in particular that it's the mediation scene, and it's quite a long scene, but it plays massively. Like, Miles is leading it. And I remember, like, do you remember, like, on that day, and we went in, but we blocked it, but we didn't. James McArdle didn't bring the performance, and we just shot it on the wire first. And that what he does and how he manipulates his emotions and plays that character was almost like infuriating but fascinating at the same time to see someone lie but do it in such a psychotic
charismatic
way.
He really went deep. I mean, yeah, it was lovely. It was really lovely to watch. Everyone was kind of firing on all cylinders. I think we were really lucky. We all moved our lives down to Cornwall, and we became this little bubble. Both, you know, the four of us in one sense, four actors, but also the wider crew. And you know, Kate was there with her family. Kate, our director, and I think that really sometimes when it works and there's a real harmony, it really feeds into the work, and people feel brave to make big choices. And I think James particularly felt like, you know, he had the means within the role to make these kind of quite sort of audacious choices and ideas. And, you know, he, not to take away from Grace's brilliance, but he often would sort of throw in these lines, which were so good. All of them are in. Like, yeah. You know, the line when he says, needs a bit more salt, babe. That's James just having fun, you know?
I just wanted to punch it. I was just like, of course you were going to say that and critique her cooking.
And he was so in it, and he was able, I think, because we were all so close. We all felt really, it's the best thing for an actor to feel looked after when it's both kind of the emotional, tender stuff, but also just a more playful space.
Exactly. Mm. Especially when you're working with two very young actors as well, is that because he did that and he constantly kind of changed it up between takes, that, you know, little Albie or Fraser, they just saw him as this Miles, the really fun, the fun parent.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, it's hard to compete with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They did a brilliant job as well, didn't they? Little kids, yeah. James, this has been made by your production company, Rabbit Track Pictures. When it came to casting, were you ever tempted by that? Because Miles is such a great character, and not to take away from James, as you said, he gives an extraordinary performance. Were you ever tempted, though? Because it's a juicy role.
To play Miles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is funny you should ask that, because four and a bit years ago, when we first optioned the book, and it was the first book that Kitty and I optioned, the first initial conversations with the writer of the book, JP Delaney, and then Studio Canal, who kind of quite soon after the first meeting came on board as co-producers, we were all assuming that I would play Miles. I was excited by that role. So you're right. Like, basically, it's such a delicious role, and it felt like it made sense for some reason, certainly to JP and me as well, to some extent. And then as the course of the development process sort of carried on, I got more and more excited by Pete and, you know, the kind of normalcy and everyday, everyman qualities. The question around what would one do if you were in the situation, I found it really exciting to be in someone who was much closer to me as a person, because it really asked that question, what would I do? And so, over, I think probably 6 months to a year into the development process, I sort of switched over and decided that, I wanted to take on Pete. And now I cannot imagine anyone else playing Miles. Like, I wouldn't want to touch that role. James is so good in it. It's so deliciously horrible. And there's something about working with James McArdle where he plays with tone. You know, on the one hand, it's the vicious, sadistic, dramatic kind of naturalism. And then he'll like flick a little look, as Nate was saying, it's like an eye flick or a bit of humor. And it's suddenly a bit comedic, but you're in the same world. You know, he's just, and it just serves the role so well, his playfulness and
as a viewer, you take him, he's a nasty bastard. That's my term for it, James.
Yeah. But he loves his son. That's the thing, as well. He does it beautifully. Like, there's a heart there. But Psycho. He's like, you know what it is.
I'm just having a very visceral reaction as a viewer. So you exec produce, wanted to find out what that was like, but also Niamh, this is a safe space. How did you find him as an exec producer?
There's a lot of pressure on set. James, as James said, like we became like this like little family down there. We were down in Cornwall for 3 months, and himself and Kitty were just, they're just gorgeous to work with, really are. And very giving. Like James is, he's a very giving actor in the sense that it gives so much in a scene, but also there's like problem solving to be able to, you know, talk with someone who is producing at the same time. I was just in awe of just being able to see him put on the different hats and of like producer and then as Pete. And yeah, it's really inspiring.
Thank you. Aww. Thank you. It was very sweet. I know I'm getting a bit...
as a review, it's like a Trustpilot review. You got a good review, James. Well done.
Thank you. Well, this is a podcast, but if you could see me, I'm going red. I've got to say as well, though, this was a massively collaborative process. And that's why I think that it was really important to stress how, you know, the four of us went down, we didn't leave. And, you know, with this type of work, it's so subtle. It's so full of nuance. You know, it's not broad brushstrokes. And so, you know, the contribution from Niamh and Jesse and James, not just James throwing in these great like one-liners, which were undeniably excellent, but like, we all really cared and we really worked with Kate, and Grace was gracious enough to let us work with the scripts and the scenes, and there was maneuverability, I was also so grateful to have really intelligent actors who wanted to make it as good as it possibly could be, and everyone in their own way improve the script no ends. Not that it needed improvement, but you know, took it to that elevated space where it just felt really embedded in all of us. And we went on a proper journey together, and just the best. I mean, the actors are the best. We were so lucky to get James, Jesse, and Niamh.
The Fab Four. It's emotionally intense, obviously psychologically intense. How did you guys decompress after film, like after a day's filming? I mean, you were in Cornwall.
We went home most nights and meditated and had baths. Mm-hmm.
We swam in the sea a lot. I think the sea, cold water is a great way of literally pulling you back from taking you out of your head and back into your body, because it literally does that. It's like a physical shock.
Niamh and I love cold water. Yeah. We all surf loads all the time. We had this amazing surf instructor called Pete, actually, ironically, who became kind of like an honorary member of our little troop. And he would take us surfing most weekends. There's a lot of outdoor. Niamh and I, we went a lot of like walking and running. And then there was quite a lot of time spent down the Rhetoric Mill, which is this sort of party place where we went out on various weekends. At one point, James very, very aptly noticed that we really looked like ABBA. My hair, as you see in the show, was blonde. And so we were like these two blonde sort of brunette couples. And so when it was obviously over Halloween, so the Rhetoric Mill had this big Halloween party, and we went as ABBA. And,
very
and
good.
One of many nights where we... decompressed in a bit.
Yeah. Well, also it's great working with Jesse, James, and James. It's like they take the work seriously, but they don't take themselves seriously.
Yeah.
So, and when you're working with like heavy themes, I don't know, your brain looks for giggles. It's almost like when you accidentally laugh at a funeral, you don't know why you're doing that, but you're looking for for escape and McCartney,
You need like relief at the end of the day. Okay, finally, so obviously title playing nice. How about playing dirty? So I wanted something that you've done. Now, not too incriminating, guys. I'm talking childhood confessions, right? So yeah, nothing that's going to get you hauled away. Like, you know, stealing money as a banker in Monopoly, etc. So when was it, you know, as a child, when did you play dirty?
I remember very, very clearly as a very young child, not much older than Albie and Fraser, stealing a chocolate bar from my mum, and I put it upstairs in my bedside table for like what felt like weeks, and it was this, like, you know, contraband, which I was so excited about. I'd come home after school and I'd look at the chocolate. You know, I wouldn't eat it. I'd just look at it, and I knew that I'd done something, but I didn't quite know how bad it was. And then what was probably like 2 days, but felt like 6 months later, I went, and for some weird reason, I decided to eat it in front of my mum.
Oh, and my God. Went,
I know. And I remember walking into the kitchen with this big gleeful grin, chocolate everywhere. Like, look, I've stolen your chocolate and I'm eating it. And I remember she turned around and she's like, what are you doing? Like, where did you get that chocolate? Because obviously I was too young to have pocket money. And it was the first feeling of guilt where my body just filled with this feeling of like self-disgust and like pain, and it's never left me. And I'm still still feeling that guilt.
Do you know what? I loved it. I thought at first you were going to say you didn't eat the chocolate. I was like, oh, what a waste. But then you just have the swagger to eat in front of her.
There's something I need to unpack with my therapist there. I don't know why why I went in front of her, but I did. So that was my the beginning
Very
of my
bold.
Rebellious years.
That's a good one. That's a high bar now for you, Niamh.
Well, like, I robbed a bank when I was a child.
Love it.
So that's where it started. No, my thing when I was a kid, I don't know if I talk about this.
Nope.
But,
what did you do?
We used to steal stationery. Yeah, in the post office. There was like a stationery part.
Yours is criminal.
It is criminal, but as a child, it was because like, I don't know, it was always like the stuff that your parents are like, you don't need that. And you're like, yes, I do. It's a hedgehog eraser. Of course I need it. So it was like small things like that.
Niamh, you were such a geek. I'll take the whole punch, please.
I'll take the whole punch.
Everyone else is stealing cigarettes and booze.
And then, listeners, she returned it afterwards. Okay,
brilliant.
Thank you so much. Look, we look forward to watching it all on ITV1 Playing Nice in January. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place. With coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
That was James Norton and Niamh Algar. It's time now for news.
News.
Now, there are many things to discuss, many, many wonderful things to discuss in news. The Golden Globes are not one of them, but we will get onto it.
Oh, God, I forgot about the Golden
Globes. Yeah, the Golden Globes were a thing. That was a thing that happened. Yeah. But
I'm going to guess what you're talking about. I'd like to guess what James is about to talk about. When he adopts the tone of all of these other things are happening, but this is the important thing. My guess this week is the Reacher trailer. Am I right?
No.
Oh!
Because, to be fair, that was probably second on my list. The Reacher trailer
now
was...
I'm intrigued.
Is
it The Last of Us?
It was The Last of Us.
The Last of Us, so stupid.
It was The Last of Us trailer. So The Last of Us, we now know, is arriving in April. We don't have a specific date, but it is arriving in April, and we got a full trailer. We saw Abby, we saw Ellie, we saw Joel, we saw everything. As someone who's played the game through multiple times, I am very, very excited about The Last of Us Part 2. It is incredible. Now, there's only 7 episodes in this second season. Some people are not happy about that. But that's because the story of The Last of Us Part 2 is being split over seasons 2 and 3, and they found a natural breakpoint.
What channel?
Episode 7.
Is it Netflix?
This is Sky.
This is Sky.
It's an HBO show.
Do they often do 2 parts?
Well, no, so it's not like that. It's not season 2 part 1 and season 2 part 2. It's season 2 and season 3.
Sorry, I was only half listening.
As ever.
Quarter listening.
But I'm, as you can imagine, very, very psyched that our show of the year will be arriving in April. So that's good. We can do the end of year list now, really, if you want to save some time.
You're making not swearing very hard from there.
So yes, that was my most exciting thing of this week by a country mile.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether off the back of that, now you know, the show I am most excited about in 2025 is The Last of Us Season 2.
We certainly do.
So what I'm going to ask my question. Since our listener question was dispensed of quite quickly, I'm going to say, what is the one show that you are most excited about in 2025?
Oh, listen, you can't do that. We need to research that. Well, I need to look at what's coming out and get excited about that. Also, stop dissing Marcus and his question.
Sorry, Marcus.
He asked a question. We answered it in a fulsome way.
Right.
So I don't have an answer.
So you're not going to tell me?
I'll give you an answer.
Hold on. I've got the answer.
Okay. Well, it's got an answer.
It's The White Lotus Season 3.
Oh, that's the one you're most excited about.
That is a good...
And what country is this?
Coming soon.
Thailand.
Yeah. It's coming very soon. Hopefully, we'll speak to one or more of the cast for the podcast, Sky Atlantic Net, February.
I'm going to co-opt that answer and I'm having it as well.
You know, in a previous episode of this podcast, Beth recorded an episode of Pilot from the White Lotus.
Yes.
So jealous.
She was on set in the hotel in her room and recorded an episode of this.
Series one or two?
Series two. Yeah, she was on set of series
two. That's my favourite series.
Yeah.
Mm. Brilliant. Yeah, no, I can't wait. Absolutely can't wait. And trading for that, I think, I can't remember whether we discussed it already.
Yeah, we...
Have we?
Oh, I don't know if we've discussed it. I've seen it.
Well, I mean, that's all that counts.
And I discussed it with someone.
Okay,
you saw it and talked to someone about it. That's enough. Yeah, we don't need to talk about it anymore.
It was great. Check it out.
Yeah. So that's... okay, fine. So you're both going to say White Lotus is the show.
Yes.
I'm also very excited that we're going to get to see Squid Game Season 3, which, as we discussed on Pilot Plus, is actually Squid Game Season 2 Part 2. But there was
a
leak.
Is that definitely this year?
Well, so not only is it this year, but we think that the date has leaked. Oh. So there was a promotional video which was uploaded on Netflix Korea's YouTube channel, and it mentioned a premiere date of June the 27th. Mm. So, middle of summer.
That might be fake news. Are we doing... Is this a new fake news leaking news section?
But it makes sense.
Leaking news.
You know, I'd heard elsewhere that it might be coming later. It's not through official channels, just like on the internet.
James
when I say elsewhere.
Leak.
I don't have any kind of connect. I'm just saying I read it on the internet. So it must be true. But I, you know, I want it within 6 months. Like, that's my demand.
What's his name? The Netflix boss?
Oh, yeah, Ted Sarandos.
Reed,
absolutely.
Perkins. Or
whatever. Completely. Yeah. Drop a line. Yeah. 6 months. You've got
He's
6 months.
He's next on James' interview.
Because there's also Stranger Things, the final season, isn't there?
There is,
they have to squeeze in something.
And The Witcher, the new series. Well, Witcher Season 4.
Whatever.
With Liam Hemsworth in the role. That could go either way, couldn't it? Yeah. I've got a little list of shows here.
I like how you derailed news.
I like to derail news.
Luckily enough, in the new issue of Heat Magazine, James, I'm sure you'd be delighted to know, I have done a feature, a four-page feature on big stuff coming out, but film and TV.
Really?
In fact, it's a six-page feature.
Where is Love Rat 2 on this list?
But I have included The Last of Us. Do you know what number it is? 21. Number 21. 21st most anticipated.
Okay, what's at 20?
20 is The War Between Land and Sea, which is the Doctor Who spin-off, starring Russell Tovey.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I was hoping it'd be something I could be incredibly sneery about.
No, you can't. Andor, season 2 at 13.
Andor. Yes, do you know what? Andor is probably in second place for me.
Exactly.
So it's Last of Us, Andor. Oh, God,
you said
do you know
something
what?
Else was second place. Didn't
well, Squid Game? I've changed. It's a Broadchurch. My second place is a Broadchurch.
He didn't do research for his own song.
Well, it wasn't like I prepared it. It was off the cuff. But it's going to be difficult to do our end of year list. Will we have number one Last of Us? Will we have number one Andor? It's going to be really difficult.
It's something for us to worry about in 12
months. Or will
it
be The White Lotus? More importantly,
unlikely.
Yeah, that'll be
What else have we got? I mean, Cobra Kai is finishing. Who cares? Yellow Jackets is back. That's going to be exciting. Hopefully, as long as it's more like season one than it was season two. White Lotus, as you said, is back. Reaches season 3, which you alluded to, Boydie, did also have a trailer, which I'm very excited about. Reacher Season 3, which is out, checks notes, February 20th. So this is based on the 7th Lee Child Jack Reacher book, which is Persuader. The trailer's a lot of fun. Mm. It's a lot of fun. I'm very, very excited.
It's one of those shows. Now it's all, news is mushed up with.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the whole
thing is a mess.
I don't
even know what this is anymore.
It's anarchy.
But my thoughts on the trailer for Reacher was that it was one of those shows that shows you the whole series. Basically.
It did. Yeah, it really
did. I don't really need to watch it now. Yeah. You summed up the whole thing in two and a half minutes. The other thing I'm most looking forward to is the new Michaela Cole show, which is called First Day on Earth, and that's going to be on BBC One this year at some point.
Oh, that's exciting.
Very excited about that. Now you've got me just randomly leafing through your preview.
While you're leafing through, I'm going to tell you some news, some actual news, which is that HBO have cancelled the franchise, which is the show that divided listeners.
If it didn't divide listeners so much as unite them against us,
that's
true.
Wow.
We liked it.
Us from the listeners.
Yeah, everyone listening to this podcast hated it. It seemed it was a bit inside baseball for them and they didn't really enjoy it.
Yeah, I think it's a shame. I thought it was really funny.
I really enjoyed it.
People thought it was funny to start off with, and then I sort of went off a little bit.
Yeah, people thought it was a bit smug.
Why are they listening to this podcast?
I mean, I did have that same thought. Yeah, I did have that same thought. But yeah, so that has now been officially cancelled at HBO. There will be no franchise season two. It's not going to be a franchise, is what we're saying.
No.
I mean, you, Kay, would have been very excited to hear that Ghost of Tsushima is getting a Crunchyroll anime release. I mean, you must have been pretty stoked about that, having played the game endlessly. So that was pretty cool.
Well done. Well done. You should feel proud of that one.
Thank you. It's not coming out till 2027, though, so you're going to have to wait.
Did you see that? We're now on news now, right?
I mean, who knows, we have been for a while, but yeah, okay.
Squid Game, season 2, fastest Netflix series ever, fastest growing to 126.2 million views in 11 days now. Obviously, this is with the caveat that Netflix's way of measuring these things is God knows what it means. It probably means that 126 million people have watched the first 2 minutes or something. But anyway, it is officially already a gigantic phenomenon, as was the first series. Which, Kay, you still haven't watched it. Yeah. It's a bit like James and the most popular shows
Gavin
on TV. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but this is because it's like uber violent, right?
Yeah, but you adjust yourself to uber violence.
Yeah, but I don't think you want me to. Because if I become, immune to that kind of thing, you never know what's going to happen around here.
Wow. That's a dark threat.
Yeah, threatening to turn into a psychopath before our very eyes. Wow, interesting.
Already regretting it, yeah. Saying it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right, should we address the Golden Globe in the room?
Oh, yeah.
Should we have a look at this?
Shogun.
Yes. Right, okay, let me bring up the winners list so that
delighted
I've got it in front of me.
About their successes.
Lovely to see Yabushige from Shogun getting an award for Best Supporting Actor. Also really loved his speech. So this is Tadanobu Asano, and he's genuinely hilarious in the show, and I loved his speech. Like, most of you won't have heard who I am. He played Yabushige.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, so he's the guy with the top knot ponytail.
Oh, that doesn't narrow it down really, does it?
No, but as in like the... Oh.
He's the one who's like, he's like the sort of regional boss, like a sub boss, if you will. But he's the one who's really scheming and duplicitous also really funny.
Yeah, I love it. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's so much fun. So I'm really glad that he got that. Hiroyuki Sanada, of course, took Best Actor in a Drama or TV Series, although with the Golden Globes, could fucking be musical or comedy. Wouldn't have made any difference. Shogun won Best Drama, which is very exciting.
Hacks won Best Musical or Comedy.
I'll give them that. It is a comedy. Yeah, They can have that. Yeah. Anna Sawai won as well for Shogun. Jeremy Allen White won for Best Musical or Not At All a Comedy for The Bear.
I think we just got to let it go.
And wasn't there. Snubbed it.
Yeah. No, he snubbed it clearly because it isn't a comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Jodie Foster won for Limited Series for Night
Almost
Country.
Certainly because of her interview on Bright TV podcast.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Colin Farrell
Richly
for The Penguin.
Deserved. Yes, that was interesting. Mm. Yeah. The Penguin is the one show that everyone keeps saying I need to watch more of.
Is it a blind spot for you?
It was a blind spot. I didn't love the first couple of episodes.
I was more up on it than you.
Yeah.
I watched about four, but I did not watch the rest. So we did a spoiler special for Penguin. It hasn't gone up yet, but we did one on Empire.
Ooh.
And I was not on it because I hadn't finished it.
Wow. So,
are you sure? Or was it because you were in Switzerland?
It was not. I was not in Switzerland at the time of recording. But I didn't do that one because I hadn't finished the series.
Jessica Gunning.
Yes, for Baby Reindeer.
Female actor, quite rightly. Baby Reindeer, miniseries or TV film, Triumph for them all around. Interesting. And yeah, that was about it, really. I think.
Yeah.
But it was pretty good. I mean, Golden Globes is, I always say, absolute nonsense, run by a load of doofuses, but actually, often they make quite good decisions, as they did.
I mean, do they? No, I mean, they make some...
TV this year, I
think they make more sensible decisions for the actual winners than they do in the actual categories, but
I know you're obsessed with the categories.
I am obsessed with the categories,
but I was like, get over it.
I'm never getting over it. I think the Golden Globes, if I'm going to be perfectly honest, attracts more talent than they have any right to for, given what the ceremony is.
I mean, it was fun. It's annoying that it's not broadcasted, because it is actually fun. And it was a really good show, apparently, hosted by Nikki Glaser, the first solo female host of the Golden Globes. And from the clips I saw, which were extensive, I watched her opening monologue, blah, blah, blah. She was great. She was really funny.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So it's a good show, but it is obviously a load of old nonsense.
Good show, but a load of old nonsense. That's it for news then. We move on now to this week's reviews. And we begin this week with American Primeval, which actually aired last week on Netflix. And this is created by Mark L. Smith. And once again, teams up Peter Berg as director and Taylor Kitsch as a floppy-haired hero alongside Betty Gilpin in a story of the formation of the American West as kind of natives, outlaws, the army, and, you know, Mormons all clash for control. Now, Boydie, aside from this being on Netflix and thus stopping us from being able to call this Amazon Primeval, please tell us, what did you think of Peter Berg's Westworld?
Good joke. Westworld as well. Just thrown it all in.
Yeah.
It was all worth it for the bloopers that we just had to endure while you tried to work out how to pronounce therefore.
In the end, I just avoided the word.
Yeah. Cunning. Thus. It's interesting. Interesting, this series, because it is, on the one hand, it is gritty and kind of seemingly a very authentic looking depiction of the Wild West
the pre-Wild West.
Yeah, it actually takes place in 1857, I believe,
just after Boyd was born.
Very good. Very good. Punchy. And it all starts with Betty Gilpin, who's had a busy time, from Mrs. Davis, the demented insanity of Mrs. Davis, to this. She plays a woman on the run for mysterious reasons, accompanied by her frankly, ridiculously clever 10-year-old son, Devin. And she will do whatever it stays to stay alive. And she's trying to take him and herself to meet her husband somewhere. And she wants someone to help her on this kind of journey, help enable her journey, because all of the world that where they are, where they're based, these places are lawless hellholes, basically.
She wants a guide, doesn't she?
Yeah, she wants a guide, because she's going to have to go through the lawless hellholes of random violence and all-round psychopathy. You've got her, so you've got them, then you've got Taylor Kitsch's character is Isaac, who is whose family has been murdered, and he's this, as you alluded to, in obviously when he was young and in Friday Night Lights he was a hot young thing and he was very hot. This is a bedraggled, you'd barely recognise him. In fact, if I had been told it was Taylor Kitsch, I probably wouldn't have noticed whatsoever. He's this bedraggled figure who's trying to cope with, who's ended up, you know, kind of almost like a homeless wilderness figure, who's quite interesting. Dane DeHaan pops up as a Mormon who's just got married to a woman called Abish. And there's a whole persecution of Mormons story element to the whole show. So it's very much what it's kind of depicting is, as you say, the pre-Wild West, where there are tribes, there are nations, there are Native Americans, there are Mormons, there are the kind of government troops, if you like, who are kind of trying to keep, well, I say they're trying to keep the peace, but actually they're also just trying to maintain their power, if you like, in the face of these other forces. And it's a big kind of morass of forces, of elements, and mud and slaughter and blood. And I thought I was pretty entertained by it. And then suddenly, like halfway through, there's this scene of utter devastation and violence, hardcore violence. And then you realise that this is written by the guy who wrote Revenant. And I suddenly thought, that's the kind of tone of it. And it is Revenant-y, isn't it, in tone? And sometimes even in direction, because it does that thing that Revenant did really well, which was you'll get arrows suddenly smacking people in the face when you least expect them, people having their heads torn off, where you don't see the attackers coming. So it's got this real kind of almost this kind of immersive feel to it, which I think is very well done, brilliantly handled by Peter Berg, the director, etc. So I thought it was really good, quality piece of TV. I like westerns. I was fascinated by it, but the acid test, I didn't feel like got to. In fact, I watched this a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't carry. Haven't carried on watching any more of it. Apart from the fact, I think I watched two episodes, but I haven't gone back to it yet.
I would be more inclined to watch another episode of this than another thing that's coming up that we're going to review. But
mystery thing coming up that you're not going to carry on watching.
Okay. I enjoyed this because it's not usually something I'd watch.
Are you not a Western girl?
No, not really. I thought it was beautifully shot. Like, it was just so vast, you know, and the way, these, as you say, these different groups coming together, they're all, you know, lawless and all the fighting.
It's really violent, though.
Yes, there's a shocking scene of violence that actually took my breath away, like a gasp.
Yeah.
Because it was just so extreme, as Boyd has described. And I was like, oh my God. I felt like some of the special effects was a bit ropey. Did you feel that, James?
There are moments.
But overall, I thought it was really well done. And it really, as you say, I felt really immersed in it and I felt I was part of it and very terrified. But I was surprised that some of the people involved survived. I don't know how realistic that would be. But yeah, I enjoyed it. And in my head, I thought, oh, I'm going to watch more of this. But the truth of it is, I haven't.
I will never watch more of this.
Oh, okay.
As long as I live.
Really? Wow. Did you
it's
hate
misery
it?
Porn. The whole thing is misery porn.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just so overtly, oppressively miserable. So it's not just the violence, because I can actually deal with violence. Gangs of London is violent, you know, like super violent. But this is so bleak and nihilistic and depressing. And like, we get it. Like, life on the frontier was cheap and short and miserable and harsh, and we understand. But must everyone be stabbed, scalped, raped, murdered, shot every 3 seconds?
Actually, do you know what? There's a scene with a Native American mum and daughter, and I found that quite harrowing.
It's just like, but it was one scene after another. It's not like, you know, sometimes you get these films or TV shows where it's quite like intense, but then you have like a happy thing where someone picks some flowers. There is no happy flower picking at any point in this.
Although you would say
that's tonal shifts. There's no tonal shift. There is one tone and it's fucking miserable. But it just, you go from one depressing scene to the next depressing scene to another depressing scene. And then it's like, oh, they're offering her a lift. Oh, she's going to die. Like, it's just like...
Spoiler.
I mean, she doesn't die, it's not a spoiler, but yeah.
Well, that's now a spoiler.
Does she or doesn't she?
Does she or doesn't she die? She's also, like Schrodinger's pioneer. Mm, she lives and dies.
Also, the point of it is that this is airing in January, which is already depressing.
Yeah, so, no one needs this in January. Everyone's trying to get through dry January. They're all sort of bloodshot-eyed looking at the TV, and Peter Berg is like pouring misery in their faces.
Although, equally, would you want to watch it in summer?
Probably not, no. Yeah. It is beautifully shot, and I'm sure it's a very sort of poignant, very powerful story. But, you know, you remember like the Yellowstone spin-off, which was, pick a date. What was it, 1883? I want to say it was 1883.
Sure, let's go with that.
Yeah, I think so.
But that, you know, that had some hardcore stuff in it, and you got the sense that, you know, life was hard, it was difficult, you were going to die. But it had hope to it. I mean, it ended in a really depressing way, but it had a sort of variety, it had a topography of tonality to it. Whereas this, I just felt...
Topography of tonality.
It could well have typography as well, but I was mainly thinking of the topography. But I just felt with this, it had one note and it just hit that note again and again and again, and it was just misery for me.
And that note was D for depressing.
Yeah.
Well, it is interesting that this arrives in the world of where we've got Taylor Sheridan and all these Taylor Sheridan Western inflected shows. Yeah. And on my guesses, and I have not researched this or looked into it, that this was partly... you know, a desirable commission for Netflix, that's a different service.
Yeah, that's
service.
A very different website. Yeah.
That it probably had appeal to Netflix because of the huge success of his stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, maybe that there's a Western resurgence, everything. Mm. But I do agree with you.
Western, if you will.
But the thing about his shows is that they are all very much, they're all kind of entertainment is their thing. So even if there is, you know, violence and bleakness, etc., it is tempered by a certain amount of fun. And you cannot describe this show in any way whatsoever as fun. In fact, it does. I didn't like that about Revenant as well. I think it has Revenant's kind of very self-serious, grueling, you know, kind of tone. I felt very kind of irritating.
Well, interesting, like, because that film very much like that the main character is going through this unspeakable, unimaginable ordeal. And so they decided, as the audience, we should also go through an unspeakable, unimaginable ordeal.
Yeah.
And it feels a little bit like that's the same here. They're saying, you know, life was so hard for these people, it was so miserable. So do you know what? For the next hour, you're going to live that and you're going to experience it first. Hand. And I just feel like that's not how I want to spend my January.
But I think people will enjoy it because it is a quality drama, but they just need to go into it knowing it's going to be bleak.
Yeah. Maybe you should intersperse it, like have an episode of this. Netflix should like chop it up. An episode of this, then you watch an episode of Nobody Wants This, and then you watch another episode of this, and you split them up like that.
Suggest it.
I will.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll call Ted. Yeah. I'll mention it.
There's a lot of TED
talk.
Communication.
TED talk. It's good. So that is Misery Chops, the series, which airs on Netflix. No, it's actually already aired. It started on Netflix last week and it all dropped in one go, so you've probably already seen it. So why have you been listening for the last 5 minutes? I don't know.
If you have.
American Primeval then, on Netflix. Next, this week, we have Out There, Set in Wales.
Nope.
Isn't it? This is Martin Clunes sporting a, let's be honest, much better Welsh accent than I can do. Or is it? Very good. And he's a widower with, frankly, a drone phobia and a wayward son who lacks the common sense that God gave a donkey. But it's ruddy bloody out there, isn't it?
Oh, God.
I just say it might be a good thing that you never watched Gavin and Stacey because there's a heavy Welsh. We don't want your version of Barry Island.
Yeah. Nobody needs that.
No one needs that.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell us about Out There.
I will tell you that it's written by Ed Whitmore, who was behind Steel Town Murders. And as you said, Martin Clunes plays Nathan Williams. So he is a farmer whose farm has been in his family for generations, and he's thinking about expanding. What this show does well, I would say, I'm going to focus on that first, is that it really sort of reflects the challenges faced by farmers today, right? The financial pressures and the devastating things that can happen to them as a consequence in terms of like affecting their mental health, etc. Also, it made me aware of something that I didn't realise, which is that the countryside is being overrun by criminals, or criminals are using the countryside as to carry out their country...
Yeah, real county, emphasis on the first syllable there.
County lines, ooh, drug dealing. And so this, yeah, so Martin plays Nathan and he is trying to keep his farm afloat. He really cares about the local farms and the countryside and the fact that he is suspecting that the criminals are moving into his into the territory. He also is looking out for his son. He's a widow. And he's concerned about his son, of course, Johnny, played by Lewis Ashbourne Circus, who I have to say is really good in this.
Louis, I think.
Oh, is it Louis? Yeah. Sorry. See? See what I'm talking about?
You're an equal opportunities racist. Yeah. We get this. It's fine.
See what I mean? I just mess up all the names. Anyway, so yeah, Johnny is largely well-adjusted, and but something happens which jeopardizes both him, his family, the farm, and... That is that he takes care, he takes a package in for his friend. A friend says to him, can you look after a package? I mean, it's just so...
Can we just take a minute there to do this plot point? This boy, like, incredibly dodgy mate says, please, can you hold on to this package, which is this crumpled brown thing.
It's not an ASOS
delivery, It's completely wrapped up. It is 100% not a Prime delivery. It's not ASOS. It's not even Shine. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's clearly something dodgy. And he goes, is it Sheen? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, well, there you go. Good to know.
We're all messing up words today.
No, I'm just putting them out there. I'm not cutting anything out. But yeah, I mean, what is he thinking?
But no, I'm going to defend that.
Boy's done it all the time. Boy was like, do you know what? It could have been a supreme drop. You don't know.
Give me a package, I'll look after it. No. I'm going to defend that bit of writing. I thought they did quite a good job of... It was peer pressure. It's peer pressure.
Yes.
If you've got this guy, this friend...
A super dodgy mate.
They had a lot of explanation of why...
Well, because he fancies the dodgy mate's sister, and that's the hook, isn't it?
They had reasons. Yeah. There's that. Yeah. They haven't seen each other for a while. They mentioned that very briefly. In the script, I noticed there were lots of little things they dropped in to further explain why he would take the seemingly idiotic decision to look after this package. And he's just doing it. He weighs it up. He doesn't immediately go, oh, yeah, of course I will. He says what's in it. So I reject the whole idea. And let's face it, teenagers do stupid things. It's one of the themes of the whole show.
I think it's fine. I do agree. It is definitely peer pressure. And you can see how that happens all the time, right?
One more thing. People go on planes and they're given stuff to take on planes and they do that. That happens.
Boyd,
as a thing.
I know you said you've welcomed any packages. Please do not get on a flight.
No, I won't. But
otherwise, you'll never stay in that hotel.
Unbelievably, people do. You've seen the documentaries about it.
Yeah, the Peru too.
Yeah, so people are stupid, James, is the bottom line.
Okay.
Carry on.
And anyway, so yeah, it's kind of about that. It's about this, the fact that he's taken in this package and what's going to happen after that. I'm not going to spoil anything. I would say, so that the positives are that accent aside, I think he's quite convincing in this role as a farmer who, you know, he owns his own farm, by the way, in real life. And I think he is...
Clunes has a Clunes farm.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
And I think he convinces in that role.
Mm.
And I think the son is very good. Louis.
Who is the son, by the way, of Andy Serkis and Lorraine Ashbourne, the actors.
By the way, I didn't realise that at the time.
Oh, yeah,
I knew Scott Serkis. I didn't realise that Serkis was married to Lorraine Ashbourne. What a power couple.
Yeah, yeah.
I found the first episode very slow burn, and I don't think it had enough story. Like, I don't know, it just felt like it was just chugging along. Obviously, some key things happened, but I was like, okay, come on. And then by the end, when it got to the last scene... I just thought I think they missed a trick with the last scene because there's nothing in that scene that made me think, oh God, I've got to watch the next episode now. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah, pretty much I'm done with this.
Do you know what? More than that, I actually had to look up the synopsis on the internet to realistically know what the show was about after I had seen the first episode. Because I'm like, at the end of it, I was like, there's the stuff with the drone and he's buying a farm and then someone wants his farm and then there's the thing with the package. And I was like, I'm not actually sure what this show's about. And then obviously the drug thing is the main theme of the show. But I hadn't really picked that up because it wasn't very compelling in this first episode. And I felt the same way you did. I got to the end of the first one. I was like, I'm just not interested in what happens next. I just presumed
the drone was connected to drugs, you know, like... But anyway,
I assume the drone was connected to the, you know, everyone wants to buy a farm, and that's not a euphemism.
I assume that the drones were all being made TV dramas for ITV and BBC because every single thriller on TV does have a drone shot.
Yeah.
So I was like, that would have been a fun, you know, subplot. In fact, they turn out to be set up there by producers.
They're doing the new season of Keeping Faith in the field next door, and that's, you know.
Exactly.
Now that's a show I love.
So, you know, maybe that is the twist in terms of the drones. I wasn't bored, actually. But I do know what you mean. The big flaw in it is that it doesn't make clear what the main story is.
No.
So you've got the drug mule story, which is kind of interesting-ish. And then towards the end, when he has to drop something else off,
yeah,
for the same,
he does it again,
and the police are watching him, you think, oh, okay. So is even then that storyline gets kind of,
it felt like a B story to me.
Yeah,
I had no idea that was the main thing,
because then you've got the woman, the cleaner.
Yes,
storyline.
Ever. Yes,
Ever,
the Polish
who is
cleaner.
Mysterious. Mm. And you kind of wonder why. And they're almost hinting that there's maybe going to be a romance between her and Martin Clunes, maybe. But I can't work out whether...
They did some good switch and bait stuff with that, with her character.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, they kind of did. But she might also be dodgy as well. Who knows? I don't know.
I like to think the best of people, boys.
Well, of course. But I totally agree that it doesn't tell you what the main story is, and that is the big flaw. I was never bored, though, and in fact, I would say that I think he's really good, Clunes, in it, by the way. I think that on the plus side, I think it's almost like too calm and grown up a piece of storytelling, and that's why almost they haven't honed in on one or other. You know, compare it to Playing Nice, right? The bonkers Playing Nice, where within 5 minutes you're like, oh right, I know what this is about. It's bonkers. It's about child, accidental child swapping, and they're, you know, all of that. And one of them's a psychopath. And you completely know what this show is after 5 minutes. And you may think it's a load of old absolute nonsense. You may think it's fun and entertaining. This is almost too subtle for its own good. So, like Clunes' character, I thought was very three-dimensional, very believable, mm-hmm. slight accent issues, but not that bad. But he's very mature with his son, you know, his widow.
It's a nice relationship.
It's like not forced, that relationship. And,
no.
And when he tries to, admonish him or have some kind of discipline, like telling him he can't play video games 4 nights a week or whatever it is, you're like, oh, that's reasonable. Everyone's kind of reasonable.
Yeah.
There's a really disturbing incident which you didn't mention, and I'm not having a go at you for that, but early on, I was shocked that they actually went through with this thing. Do you know what I'm referring to? There's an act of violence, effectively,
yes,
early on, that I found really powerful and surprised that they kind of went.
It's,
I was
well
like,
shot.
It's,
yeah,
quite well shot, well handled. So I think it's generally all around a quality piece of TV drama. It's just that, as you say, you don't really know what the key storyline that was supposed to grip us is. But, you know, I'm more likely to carry on watching this than I am American Primeval, I would say that.
Well, yeah, because this is only slightly miserable, whereas that's incredibly miserable.
Yeah. This has miserable elements, but in a quite an authentic and realistic way, people deal with them, and get through them.
I feel like with this, though, unless you are... you know, a massive Men Behaving Badly fan or something. Like, you're a huge, like, Clunes head. Like, what?
Well, Clunes is an absolutely phenomenally popular actor, by the way.
Maybe that is enough. But what I'm saying is, narratively, I just don't think it's hooky enough
to keep it going.
In this era of TV,
it's surprising.
I don't think that works. Like, you need to give people a reason.
Just for the record, I wasn't bored. I didn't say I was bored. I just said it was, like, not pacey.
He did. No, I wasn't bored either. No, I genuinely enjoyed it. But I just think it's true that you don't know what the main story is.
Yeah.
That's just slightly weird.
And you get to the end of the first episode, and as Kay said at the very beginning, like, it doesn't give you a reason to go on to the second one.
Not a clear one. No, that's true.
You know, unless you love a bit of Martin Clunes, can't get enough of him in your life, that there's not really a reason to go forward.
No, I think that's fair.
The truth is out there, but not here, apparently. Out there then, which is ITV1 when, Boydie?
Sunday, the 19th of January, 2025.
Whee!
It's on Sundays and Mondays for the next, I think, 3 weeks. I think it's a six-parter. Yeah.
Okay.
My guess is it's going to do really well because he's phenomenally popular and people like it. It's got a good trailer. And yeah, I think it'll do really well. Anyway, I don't know. Just throw that in.
We'll see.
Prediction. Yeah.
We will see.
Yeah.
Finally this week, the main event, we have Severance Season 2, which arrives literally 3 years after Season 1 of this show, which was critically acclaimed. I think it was our show of the year when it came out. And a lot has happened. There's been two strikes which have derailed the production of this. There have been some sort of power battles in production as well, by all accounts. So I think it's safe to say we were all going to have some concerns going into this. Like, is it what shape it's going to be in? Can it possibly live up to the first season? If you didn't watch the first season, this sees Adam Scott as Mark S. And he is the Severed Innie, which we'll get to in a second, at a corporation called Lumen. And his entire existence was in the company because the idea is that, and this came from the creator having worked at a shitty office job, is that he is severed, meaning that when he walks through the doors of his office, of his workplace, like a separate personality takes over and does the job because his mind is wiped, and then he picks up again when he leaves work. So he has a work persona and a home persona, an innie and an outie. And, you know, Boydie, I should probably ask this, if this is not too personal a question, are you an innie or an outie?
Well, I'm probably both. I mean, the thing is, everyone's both, aren't they? Everyone, it's quite a difficult concept to grasp because, and in fact, they do address this in either episode one or two, I watched the first two, whereby, you know, you smush up, you know, one person has these two different identities,
yeah,
neither of which know, in theory, although in practice, even this isn't true, what the other one gets up to in their time where they're in the corporation.
Well, they don't know directly. Or they find out directly. Anecdotally.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly. And they found out, spoiler alert, in the climax.
There was a thing which blurred the lines in season one. Yeah.
But listeners, it is. Let me just say this to thank Apple TV Plus, and not just because you met the
my close personal friend.
Your close personal friend. But there is a very, very handy, I would say, 3 to 5 minute recap.
So,
yes.
I agree that it's great they had that.
Yeah.
I thought it was terrible.
Oh.
Like, I watched that recap, and at the end of it, I was like, I am no clearer now than I was before I watched this, because it was so fast edited. It was just a series of just images, and I was just like,
I mean, I think I watched it twice.
I mean, I watched it, and I was like, honestly, that has shed zero light on this whatsoever. So I ended up then immediately going to Wikipedia and reading all the episode summaries, and I was like, oh, right, I get it. Okay. And I'm going to say, you know, just a nod to Netflix here, what was yours? Yours was Netflix. Netflix. Netflix.
Yeah.
They're going to rebrand.
They should do. You and Netflix.
This episode's going to get its own blooper special.
But when they did the previously on The Witcher for The Witcher Season 2, genuinely, it was one of the best things ever because it was really funny. It had this brilliant voiceover. It was a great piece of entertainment, and I thought it was fantastic. And it did a really good job of summarizing a very complex, lore-heavy show.
Yes.
This is also a very complex show, which had a lot going on in it. And I thought that their previously on just did not cut it.
Oh, okay. Well, it helped me anyway.
Oh, it did. Maybe I'm just stupid.
I agree with you to this extent. I did immediately go back and watch it again. Watch it a couple of times and it helps. Put it that way.
Read the Wikipedia summaries. That's my advice.
Okay. But as for the show itself, cut long story short, it really instantly delivered for me. And because episode one starts with, try not to spoil anything, with some new people, shall we say, and and you think, oh God, you know, I miss the old cast, and there's these new guys coming, but actually they're kind of entertaining in their own way, and then more and more things happen that ease you into the aftermath of the first series. I watched two episodes, and interestingly enough, I can't remember. I meant to go back and check because I can't remember whether they did this in season one. But I think interestingly, Apple are putting out the first episode first, not even a double bill of two, and then the rest. And there are 10 episodes altogether. I find it really surprising that I don't put two out together, because for me, the second episode is the same story as the first episode, but told from the point
from
of view
the outies
of
point
the
of view.
Outies.
Yeah.
And it's so helpful, and it's so kind of... The first episode, I was like, oh, okay, this is really interesting. It's kind of dazzlingly directed by Ben Stiller. There's an amazing opening sequence where he's running through the white corridors of Lumen that goes on for about 5 minutes solid of him just running around trying to find the door to enter into his old world and meet meet the team. And it goes on for a long time, but it's brilliantly shot. And it's kind of like wildly visually spectacular and ambitious, just to kind of establish this show is, you know, this is a proper piece of ambitious cinematic storytelling. But the incidents that happen in that first episode, you're like, oh, well, you're not sure exactly how they are affected by what happened in the ending of season one. And then you watch episode two, and it's like, it explains quite clearly what's going on and where all the different characters are and what the innies and outie versions of the same person are dealing with. And I thought, so I might not have felt so strongly about how good it is, the second season already, if it wasn't the fact that I watched episode two straight after watching episode one. Taken together, it's a fantastically fascinating, brilliantly complex, densely layered thing about corporate life, as a drone employee of a big corporation that is so has so many kind of implications to it. And you think, so if you are an employee, I mean, not everyone is listening to the show, you know, a lot of people, there'll be lots of freelance, I don't know, plumbers or something, you know. And but I'm just thinking an example of someone who isn't in a complete different world to the one depicted.
I just thought you were trying to instantly work out a demographic of our listenership, and you went specifically with freelance
loads
plumbers.
Of plumbers. Loads of
if
plumbers.
You're a plumber, get in touch with the postbag, please.
Absolutely. But if you do work, as let's face it, we do, for a large company, and you're on a wage and blah blah blah, and they're telling you this, that, and the other about, you know, what things, new ideas and new, like,
tread carefully.
I'm trying to tread carefully, but it rings incredibly true, and I think that goes for everyone working for any corporation. Of course, Apple. There is an irony. Yeah. This is an Apple TV Plus show, as
very
you should
much
have said
so.
To Tim when you saw him. It is an incredible irony that Apple has issues at the very least.
It has some big loom and energy.
Big
at times,
loom and energy. At times, right? And in fact, all the whiteness of the design of the interiors of the innie floor.
Shake it all abouty?
Shake it all abouty. Are very Apple-like, and that can't be a coincidence, right? It's funny that how much it just kind of shows you about the implications. And when you actually start thinking about your life as an employee, it's really, really powerful and entertaining at the same time.
Okay, did you watch season one when it aired?
No, but 3 days ago I watched episode one of season one.
Okay.
And I really liked it. And I was kind of annoyed that I'd have to jump to episode one of season two.
Did you watch
two.
The recap?
I did, but okay.
She's seen episode one of season one, the recap, and then episode one of season two.
Wow.
Okay.
But I want to go
back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been on a crack. But
as Dan Erickson intended.
Well, it was either me not watch this and review it, and I thought you'd tell me off.
That's what he would have done. I mean, that's what James would have done.
This is one more for James. I'm beginning to notice that more and more.
Yeah. Go on, swear. Turn to the dark side.
I'm not doing it. This is the thing. Again, you know, up against such provocation that I've had this episode. Look at him.
You're
he's got this evil glint in his eye.
I'm going full Palpatine.
I haven't got anything meaningful to add because it was confused. You know, like, it is confusing.
It's confuzzling to us, and we've seen all the other episodes, but...
But I enjoy.
It
I'm
looks
gonna
beautiful,
go back.
Right? Like, it's stunning.
It looks
beautiful. Some of the
I like
framing
the characters.
Is incredible.
Like, I really like that lead. Well, he's the actor who plays the lead guy.
Adam Scott.
Adam Scott. Yeah, who plays Mark.
Yeah, I enjoyed that character. So but I want to go back and catch up.
Can I ask you a question? There's a really there's the title sequence of season one.
Yes,
was really good. Was great, and it kind of like it was like an almost animation CGI animation thing. So episode one doesn't have a title, but it has a title card thing.
Small, very small.
And then episode two does have a title sequence,
and the other
episode is new, which is a different title sequence to the and it's even
is
more spectacularly beautiful.
Yeah, it's stunning.
And stunning than the first series title sequence. And this is off the back of when I hosted a Gavin and Stacey thing.
Climb.
I was talking to them about the theme tune. They said, "You know what? We couldn't afford to have a title sequence." It's partly why they ended up using the song the way they do. And this is like the budget, I reckon, of this title sequence.
It's very good.
Is it like the same as the entire series of British shows?
Why would they do that? Then have one the first episode.
I don't know. That's my question. Well, yeah.
It must
so my
be
question
a mistake.
Is that is weird.
No,
they haven't made a mistake.
Not every episode.
It's a creative decision. No, it's a creative decision.
No, I don't believe it.
They forgot to put it on. I think it's worth pointing out, because obviously we're watching Apple, these are unfinished episodes. That said, I think you are right. I think it doesn't have one because I've seen six of them, and some of them have title sequences and some of them don't. In fact, of those six, I believe two didn't and the others did.
It's a neat little way of putting in that brag.
Yep, I'm fine. What, six episodes?
Is it anything to do with the fact that if it's an innie or an outie focus in a particular episode? So I wonder.
No.
Oh, okay.
That would have been smart.
I think sometimes it is tonal. I think that, like, the two episodes that don't have them feel distinct from the others. So perhaps that's the reason for it. But I don't know the exact reason. I went into this with a lot of consternation, but it's fucking brilliant.
Consternation.
Why?
Well, because of everything that's happened, it's taken so long to get here. There have been two strikes. There have been stuff going on behind the scenes. You know, was this going to... And the first season, it is Apple's most critically acclaimed show. Like, it topped all the critics' lists the year it came out. It was a massive deal. And, you know, it's second season. It's a lot of pressure.
Do you know what I'm hearing? Impatience.
A little bit of that as well. Yeah. They made me wait, Kay. Yeah. They made me wait.
That's come full circle now, if you notice, because Boyd mentioned patience at the beginning.
Yes. I had a super duper fun time. I really did. It was so much.
It was super good, not fun.
Well, all of those things. I really, really, really liked it. Weirdly, I had more fun with this actually than I did with season one. And I think partly because I think season one was slow in getting started. It took a while to draw you in.
But it's got to set up the world, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's got a lot of heavy lifting to do, whereas this obviously drops you straight into it. You come straight off the back of the most incredible plot twisty episode. The twist at the end of season one, which you don't know, is mad. And so much goes into this. And as you say, it starts with an innie episode, then an outie episode. Then it really does have a shaky all aboutie episode. And then it kind of goes on from there. And there's a watermelon head, there's a goat farm, there's a whole field trip thing. There's so much coming. And the plot twist and the way it goes, like there's an episode which makes you kind of rethink everything that's gone before it. It does incredible things. Now, I will say I've only seen half of this season, so I don't know to what extent they're going to progress the overall storyline or whether they know where they're going. It feels like they really do. Like, it doesn't feel like they're making up as they go along. It feels very self-assured, so very directed. But this second season broadens the canvas a lot. Like, Lumen is part corporation, part cult. And that's a little bit evident in the first season. It's really evident in this one.
The head of it is.
Yeah, praise Keir. It's a real...
Called Keir.
Keir Egan. Yeah.
Keir Egan.
And that's great. And I have to say, I really, really love Tramell Tillman, who plays Mr. Milchick, who's there kind of...
He's amazing.
Because he's got this real menace to him, but he's so formal and a little bit weird. And the whole show is like that. It's very offbeat, very quirky, very weird, very beautiful, very austere. And everyone acts in this strange way because it is part corporation, part cult. And it's fascinating. And then the other idea of that, and that's, you know, which is at the heart of what this show is that what makes us who we are? Are we the sum of our genetics or are we the sum of our experiences? Obviously, the answer is probably both. But I love the fact here that you'll have people, the innies, can be fundamentally different people to the outies because they simply don't have the trauma, the memories, the experiences that the outies carry with them. And they're blank canvases. So they are just almost like raw newborn babies. They are just the sum of their genetic parts. And it's really interesting, the nuances between the innie and outie personalities, some of them being more pronounced than others. And I thought that was brilliant. Zach Cherry is just brilliant as Dylan G. I love him. I'm enjoying this so much. I'm desperate for the last four episodes. Desperate for.
Oh, I mean, not to mention John Turturro. Walken in
there as well.
Brilliant relationship.
There are some other cameos in there. I'm not going to name them, but there are some really fun cameos that turn up as well. It's just so good. Like you watch this, and this is so premium. This is so brilliantly executed. I mean, this is so expensive, and it is, but it's worth the money. Like, there's a reason why this is a critically acclaimed show. It's just fantastic. So absolutely love it. Severance season 2. I think so far, like I say, I'm enjoying it more than season one. So
yeah, I'm probably first two episodes. I'm probably enjoying as much, if not more, than season one. Yeah, I remember when we reviewed it actually, and in fact, I remember thinking, "Oh, it's a bit."
And I think I was the only one who liked it.
I liked it. I just thought it was a bit slow. Slightly irritated.
Yeah, I seem to recall neither of you loved it.
No, but we did end up absolutely loving it.
Or was it? Were you on when we did this?
It was pre-K.
Was it Beth?
Oh, of course it was. I think it was Terry.
Was it Terry?
I think it was Terry.
It might have been Terry actually, but I do seem to recall I was the only one who liked it, and it was a bit weird. And
you weren't the credit for it.
Of course, he's taking credit. Yeah. I liked it. I just thought it started
trendsetter
to get going.
Boydie, massive hater, did not have a super duper good time
at
all.
I can't believe I voluntarily remembered this.
The fake news continues.
Yeah, that's it. Severance season 2, then, which is on Apple TV Plus, when, Boydie?
Friday, the 17th of January, 2025.
Yeah, week by week.
Yeah.
Well worth your time. What else is out, Boydie?
Well, we have got The Crow Girl, which is a new Paramount Plus. I remember I said this like late last year, like suddenly had a glut of original programming. And it carries on into the new year because on Thursday, 16th of January, The Crow Girl starts, which is a 6-part crime drama with Dougray Gray Scott, Catherine Kelly, Eve Miles, your favourite, Kay.
You mentioned Keeping Faith earlier.
Yeah, but it's heavily embargoed, I'm afraid.
We'll be doing that on Pilot Plus.
We'll cover that in Plus. There's a Gaelic, described as the first high end Gaelic drama, which is on BBC iPlayer from Tuesday, 14th, called Ant to Alien, if I've pronounced that correctly, and I certainly haven't. That looks quite interesting. It stars Saoirse Groundsell from His Dark Materials as Kat, who is a young family liaison officer investigating the brutal murder of the wife of a local tycoon. And I kind of watched the first few minutes of it, and it looks quite interesting. There is Exo Kitty. Is that how you pronounce it?
Is it the To All the Boys spin-off series?
With Anna Cathcart. So that's on Netflix on Thursday the 16th. From the aforementioned
yes.
From we said when that was on, didn't you? Sky Max.
I did.
Now,
yeah, on the 14th.
On the 14th. Well done. Bump, new series of Bump.
Oh yeah,
which is a good show.
I need to catch up. Australian dramedy, if I can use that word,
and I have. That's back on BBC One on Monday the 13th. And there's a show called Public Disorder on Netflix from Wednesday, the 15th, which is a six-part Italian action drama series revolving a riot squad in Rome.
I was going to offer to watch that as the foreign correspondent, sometime for foreign correspondent, well, but I think, yeah, probably not.
Go on, do it, yeah, cover it. Cover it off.
Did they riots? Maybe not.
I think that's about it, mainly.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is our pick of the week? No.
Severance.
It is Severance, without a shadow of a doubt. So our Pilot TV top shows of the year list, we've got The Last of Us, we've got Andor, we've got Severance. Mm. Top three locked in already.
Not swearing.
Well, that is it for this week's show. We are done. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, subscribe to Pilot Plus. If you already do, thanks very much. But if you'd like to leave us a 5 dickhead willy-nilly rating on podcast, then
so
do feel free to do that.
Oh, boy.
We will be back in your ears on Thursday, obviously, when we do The Crow Girl on Pilot Plus. And we may be doing our Bad Sisters spoiler chat on that episode as well. We've yet to really discuss this, so we shall see. What else we got? Yes, please do follow us on the social medias now, at Pilot TV Pod. We are on Blue Sky. We are on Threads. We are on Twitter. I mean,
we are on the subreddit.
We are on the subreddit. We are on Instagram. We're on everything there. And you can follow us at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer. Please do that as well. Next week, on next week's show, we've not even discussed the shows we're going to be covering, but what we've got, Night Agent is back, featuring Kay's lust object, High Potential.
That was it.
Disney Plus.
Do you know how many people mentioned that to me?
The Night Agent.
And I didn't even write, I watched one episode, I thought it was all right, but it's mainly, I just commented on him being looking. And then
I confused with Leo Woodaway. It's the Night Agent.
It's the Night Agent, yeah. Beacon 23 season 2, how that's not called Beacon 24, I don't really know. What else we got?
I don't remember Beacon 23 series 1.
Oh, it was a science fiction thing, Kay loved it. Okay. Prime Target comes to Apple. We'll probably be reviewing that one as well. So that's exciting too.
Definitely be doing that.
Yeah. So lots of things to get excited about on next week's show. And in the meantime, if you have any dodgy parcels that you want to leave at Boydie's house, hit him up on social media and he'd be glad to look after it for you. Wouldn't you, Boydie?
Absolutely. Very good.
Yeah. Pilot out.